Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! We go. Friday on the front porch is here. It is Friday, the 17th day of July, 2015. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where the easiest way is to get the program, namely just by clicking listen live during the live hours or clicking listen live during the hours when it's not live, and you'll get a repeat. There's also always WhiteRoseSociety.org for the podcast, the archive podcast feed. And, of course, you go to HeadOnRadioNetwork.com to jump into the real-time multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn chat room. Yeah. Good evening to longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderators Lottie and Sparky, as well as Kim from L.A., As we get started this evening. Yes, indeed, right there at the beginning of the program. We are, of course, we are, of course, a listener-supported radio operation here on the interweb tube. That means that there's no advertising. There are no commercials. No commercials for hair remedies that grow hair on bowling balls you pick up off of a Swedish mattress with an Oric vacuum cleaner, and while listening to your Bose Wave radio endorsed by Rush Limbaugh tell you to buy gold now. Nope, none of that is here. No advertising of any sort. No interruptions. We start at 6 p.m. Eastern time. We finish at 9. And there's no commercial anywhere in the midst. Just straightforward conversation of a generally progressive nature. And so, in order to keep it on the air, we ask for your support, your kind gifts. We're not selling anything here. There's nothing for sale here. It's not a quid pro quo. It is simply a gift that keeps this all going. And with that in mind, I will note that we are $340 for our fundraising goal this evening, and here's the good news. There are two matching challenges on the table, one from our good friend Gary, otherwise known as Labor Man, and the second one being the Pull the Pin Challenge, courtesy of Sparky out there in Northern California. And, of course, Pull the Pin, a reminder, has nothing to do with hand grenades, and everything to do with fire extinguisher, putting the financial fire out. And it would be great to be able to finish off the week in good stead. $340 is what we need to do that. And for every dollar that comes in for the first $200, thanks to Gary, Laborman, and thanks to Sparky, that'll be matched. So if everybody chips in and matches what is on the table, or if everybody chips in, the $200 that will match. You know what I mean, right? $200, 10 at 20, 20 at 10, 1 at 200, 2 at 100, etc., 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 get matched dollar for dollar up to the first $200, and that'll finish us to the good this week. In order to do that, you might want to run over to headonradionetwork.com, whereat you will find the tab marked Contribute. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. And at that tab, Contribute, you will fill out certain information, leaving the more intrusive aspects blank, and just get to the next screen and make all your PayPal choices. Okay? Credit cards, MasterCard, Visa, etc., PayPal balance, what have you. And we will go from there. If you prefer to use the U.S. Mail Service, the U.S. Postal Service, then the address for checks and money orders made payable to The Horn is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, BECKLEY, WV 25801. And thank you in advance. If you want to take advantage of the matching challenge and use the U.S. Postal Service, just send me a note so that I can keep that as part of the tally and let Boss Man Wayne know here that in 2 or 3 days he can go to the mailbox and not have to put on his spider-proof gloves when he reaches into the echo chamber. Stand by. Apparently there is a broadcast anomaly taking place. Hold on here. Damn, isn't this frustrating? Stand by, please. And just to make sure, yep. 8 minutes past six. We're sending, nothing going. I'm going to check on a couple of things. All right, let's see what we've got going on here. We've got a front porch group of two this evening. Are you there, Sparky?
Yes, Bob, can you hear me?
Yeah, I got you fine.
Okay, kind of juggling two things up in the air with Rick. No headphones. He said he wanted to call in on the stress line.
And it's sitting here waiting for his call.
Okay, let me mute my radio. There we go.
Yeah.
Larry dropped out.
Saw that. Hi, Steve.
Hi there. How are you doing?
Pretty good. Yourself?
Pretty good. I was up north for a week at my brother-in-law's cottage, and it was very nice and relaxing.
Now, what is up north to you?
About 150 miles north as the crow flies, you know, near the provincial park. It was, you know, very nice, clean lake, lots of birds, lots of trees, a little bit of fishing, a little bit of drinking, some stargazing, swimming.
And by clean lake, you mean a lake that the tar sands or the oil or the gas industry hasn't found yet?
Yes, yes. Yeah, I imagine you heard all about that, or you've already been talking about the Nexen oil spill of 5 million liters of bitumen froth.
Yeah, because, I mean, you know, accidents happen. You know, these things, you know, I mean, we can't expect these profiteers to not make mistakes now, can we? I mean, to err is human, right?
And the thing is, that pipe was, I don't know if you've mentioned it already, but it was put there, and it's only like a year old, 2014, and the equipment that says if it has a leak didn't work properly or at all.
Right. I mean, Well, that would probably, having it work would probably bite into the profit margin, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Let's check in here and see if we've got Rick. Hey, Rick. Is that you? Are you there, Rick?
Oh, yes. Hi.
Hey, how are you?
I am doing fine. How are you doing, Bob?
Pretty good. Welcome to the Stress Line.
Yeah, it's the first time I had to stay home today. Well, I didn't have to stay home, but I decided to stay home. I got a concert to go to tonight and another date, so. I have a story to tell you about how the front porch is a chick magnet.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. You want to hear it?
Please.
Okay, well, your last Friday on the front porch on July 3rd, I had a date with a very nice gal.
Stand by. Tim?
Sure, sure.
Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, I had my first date in probably 25 years on July 3rd, and during our date, she knew that I was into progressive talk and what have you, and so we started listening to your show, and it's kind of funny because she would hear your voice, and she said, no, I don't want to hear that guy. I want to hear you talk, referring to me, and I know
we're
talking about
America. Oh, great. Wow, my self-image, my self-esteem is sinking faster than the Titanic now. But go ahead.
Well, I think she was just trying to flatter me, but but I said, hey, Bob used to work for CNN. He's, he's a very smart guy. He's been doing this radio thing for a long time. She said, no, I want to hear you, not him. So we ended up having a real good time that night. So I guess that's my Friday on the Front Porch story. And the people around us were like, we put on the replay on the Horn Network, and people were just kind of like wondering, what's going on with these people listening to talk radio while they're having a glass of, Merlot or whatever it was we were drinking, So I thought you might get a kick out of that.
That's one. I thought maybe when you said it was Babe Magnet that you said you had a date tonight, I thought maybe you were going out with a member of the Horn community or something.
Oh, no, it wasn't that. But I mean, because of, I think the fact that I was, that she could hear me on the horn, on the front porch, I think that impressed her. So we had a really good time that night. So, that's the first time I listened to talk radio on a date, I must say.
I think it's the first time that's happened with the horn too, Rick, so, yeah.
Well, there you go. And actually there's a couple of people, I think, there's one gal that I met through Plenty of Fish who might be listening tonight. How you doing? She was looking for the talk, whatever happened to the talk radio show, because we used to have a real good progressive talk radio show a couple years ago out here in L.A. Called K-Talk, KTLK.
Right, right.
And it was, and so basically the AM dial went basically Sig Heil all the time, is, with the Patriot Radio or whatever they call it, Rush and Glenn and O'Reilly,
yeah.
And, the crazies.
Nuts all the time.
Yeah. So I was able to turn at least someone else on to the horn, and also to Norman and, Chicago's Progressive Talk. They have a good program, good lineup there as well. So, things are good. I'm going to see Judy Collins tonight.
Oh, nice.
She's playing a free concert, actually, in MacArthur Park. You remember the Donna Summers?
Well, I was named
after MacArthur Park.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, well, we don't have to worry about, given the current drought, we don't have to worry about any cakes being left out in the rain and people not having that recipe again, right?
No, we don't. I'm trying to remember the guy who redid that song. I actually like his version better. Forget the guy's name. Richard something, I think. Maybe one of the listeners knows it.
Did Shatner cover that too?
He might have done a spoof on it.
A really, really stupid cover of MacArthur Park.
Okay.
And now we have to worry about the cake being dried out or desiccated or something, I guess.
Yeah. Well, there's a lake though there. They have, you know, like, I think it's Echo Lake or something like that. It's a man-made lake. And so that's not, despite our drought, that's not drained yet. So, you know, I guess they just recycle the water and have fountains and stuff. And, yeah, we're going to go out to dinner, at a pretty nice restaurant in Echo Park and then go over to the, and listen to the show. I've always had a crush on her since I was like a teenager.
Yeah, I know.
My Judy Collins crush. Yeah, there you go. She still looks great though. I don't know if you've ever.
So, okay, so we've got to get all the details. Please provide the style of cuisine at the pretty nice restaurant.
Okay.
We have to have food porn.
That's right. Well,
Richard Harris, by the way, Richard Harris.
Richard Harris, of course. See, I had the first name right. Yeah. Well, I guess that's the synapses don't actually quite fire as quickly, you know, Bob?
Well, it doesn't help. No, Doctor Who in the chat room clued me.
Cool. Excellent. And I got another music story to tell. I saw John Fogerty at the bowl with my 20-year-old son on Wednesday night. That was a really good show, too.
Nice.
So, and then tomorrow, I'm going to see more live music in downtown L.A., and I got another date, and that's going to be
25-year dry spell, and then now you're just off and running.
No kidding, man. I don't know what's going on here. It's either feast or famine, but it's going to be, I think, Mickey Thomas of Starship is the first act, and then the second act is Martha Davis and the Motels, you know, suddenly one last summer. And,
oh, my
know,
God.
Couple of other hits, so it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to it. Oh, and then possibly Sunday night, there's another concert in Woodland Hills. Which one is Pink? It's a Pink Floyd tribute band.
Oh, that'll be fun.
Yeah, and then I have brunch on Sunday with someone else as well. So, see, this, you know, the horn really is a chick magnet, Bob. You got me started on July 3rd, so I thank you for that.
I, you know what, we live to serve, Rick. Truly, we do. So, we'll, by this time next week, we will be expecting a concert report, a meal report, a brunch report, a Pink Floyd tribute band report. Are you taking notes?
No, I'm not taking notes, but I might take some videos. if my phone doesn't die, that is, you know?
Very good.
So, anyway, Bob, I owe you some money, man. I've got to pay you. I owe you $25, and I'm going to throw another $25 in.
Oh,
okay?
Bless your heart, because that'll go halfway toward Sparky's Pull the Pin Challenge, Rick.
Good. Okay, well, I meant to do it earlier, but let me just sit in front of the computer and just get it done. How does that sound?
That's awesome. Awesomely
cool.
Helpful. And in the meantime, cool. Because you started something here, in case anybody's wondering, here with Richard Harris, MacArthur Park, and some of by any metric at all, the dumbest lyrics ever to be put to music.
Yes.
Oh, the horns are nice.
Moon was never waiting for us, girl. It ran one step ahead as we followed in the dance.
You know, we're the first line in, I'm already lost.
Between the parted pages and we're pressed in love's hot fevered iron like a striped pair of pants.
Okay, it ain't gonna get well. Spring dance pants. You gotta respect somebody who'll rhyme dance and pants.
MacArthur's Park is melting in the dark.
Wait, it's melting?
No. I'm melting.
No, what? I think someone got hold of the bad acid.
All the sweet green icing flowing down. Someone left the cake out in the rain. I don't think that I can take it, cause it took so long to bake it, and I'll never have that recipe again.
Oh, screw it. I don't have the patience.
Now,
it's hot enough to melt cake icing, I guess, and if you see any melting cake icing, just double check, make sure that nobody's, you know, handed you any little, you know, little candies or anything. Yeah, here, take this. No.
Well, God. We should ask Alex from Arizona. She can tell us about cakes melting in the sun a lot better than we can.
Well, or eggs frying on automobiles or sidewalks or, right.
There you go. That's right.
And I get Dr. Whom noting Weird Al did a parody of this song. How? How do you make a parody of something that's...
Well, Weird Al's got a rare talent for doing that, so, you know, he's the best in the business for that stuff, you know?
Okay, we're having real interesting... Cat in the background, Rick?
We got four cats on the stove that are begging to be fed. I'm going to go ahead and feed them here.
That's almost as bad as cakes melting in the rain, you know, four cats on the stove.
Exactly. Yeah, the stove's not on,
Little frisky spricassee, and then what?
What's that?
Little frisky spricassee?
Yeah, there you go, exactly. Well, the microwave is safely closed, so the cats aren't going to get into that, so... There you go. That's the important thing, right, Bob?
I do suppose. Yes, indeed. Let me ask Sparky real quick. I'm watching a technical crisis unfold over in the Horn Malloy Skype chat room. You're there.
It's not
right?
Me. It's not me.
But all kinds of folks like can hear, but not talk.
Tim's on an iPad and Larry's on an iPad.
Okay, but Gerald, do we have you?
I'm here.
Okay, good. How about Roger?
Yeah, I just, it just popped in while I was doing a download on the update.
I'll be darned. Okay.
I have no idea what's happening.
I hear you now, Bob.
Well, hello, Tim.
It's ISIS.
Hello, Bob.
Hey, I'm here now,
yeah.
Tim.
Yeah,
and I can hear.
You
can hear now too, Larry?
Yes.
It's a miracle. Praise Jesus. It's a miracle.
I went into my update and I clicked on the Skype, and then within about 30 seconds it came on, although I'm hearing it distorted, but I can hear you.
Yeah, same here. But at least I can hear you.
Hey, I'm gonna bounce out, do the upgrade, and then I'll come back in.
All right, sounds good.
And I did an upgrade. Woohoo!
For anybody, and I see Lottie in the chat room, and he's our guru on these sorts of things. I'm getting begged, tormented, implored to upgrade Java. Do I or do I not? Do we or do we not?
No.
Okay.
Unless you want to go through the whole security.
Oh.
Set up again.
So it'll overwrite that?
It might. I don't know. I haven't updated on this machine. I might have on the other one.
I had major problems last time I updated, and I was on automatic update, and there's no way to do a manual update on the iMac for me. So they had to roll back. They had to roll back my version in order for me to use the add-on chat in both your chat room and in Mike's.
Yeah, in Malloy's.
Malloy's chat room and yours.
Oh, okay. Lottie's telling me to go ahead and upgrade. It didn't overwrite. So, okay, next time through. But not anywhere near, not anywhere near airtime.
No, I can't tell you what's going to happen if you go to... put a machine on Windows 10 on the 29th. I'm going to find out on one of them.
Oh, God. Oh, God. Yeah.
I've got an older Windows 7 machine that I've been using out in the man cave, but I bring it in the house when it's so hot. It's 100, 101 degrees today, at least here in a shop. Just, I got the doors on, open on them, but it's pretty much, even with the fans, it's unbearable out there when it's 101.
Thanks, Obama.
You know, I've missed that, Gerald. Thank you very kindly. I appreciate that.
You're very welcome.
So let me bug you for a minute, Gerald. I mentioned the other day, and I don't know if you were listening or maybe busy, or, but I mentioned the demise as of July 1 of prevailing wage on state work in West Virginia. What's that's got to just like make Sparky kick furniture. What's the latest? I presume you're following it.
Probably. I'm probably not following it anywhere else. Any places that you are not, just, you know, the Gazette and the Daily Mail. Apparently, there were a couple missing emails in the witch hunt that Bill Cole and Tim Armstead started, you know, with their legislative subpoenas of workforce. And apparently they were from the ACT Foundation, the Affiliated Construction Trades. So who knows just what their content is. So, you know, that's just more fuel for their fire.
Yeah. Union thugs.
Yeah, I look for them to just first of the year that would be a full-out repeal.
Well, but it's basically... Go ahead.
They can't change jobs that are already under construction, already been out put to bid, one
would
think.
Well, as of right now, there is no state prevailing wage in West Virginia.
So any contract that gets let from July 1st on... Well, I mean, in fact, it's having a negative impact on the construction process, isn't it?
Oh, of course.
Because none of the contractors know what they're going to be paying.
Right. So they're not bidding any work. And now the vendors, the suppliers, are feeling the pinch. And I like to point it out to them every time I go there. There's a couple around here in the Kanawha Valley. Man, I just can't figure out why we don't have any business. I'll tell you why. Because the contractors aren't doing any work.
In the middle of what is typically the construction season, nobody's working.
Yeah. And I said, you know, you as a business owner, I was speaking with one. I said, you as a business owner, I don't know your politics, and I'm not going to, you know, try to tell you how to vote. But let me tell you this. If we lose prevailing wage and somehow they push through right to work next year, here's how it's going to go down. You're going to start getting all these contractors from out of state, especially in the South, or, you know, right to work states. They're going to bring their workforce with them, and they're going to bring all their materials with them. I mean, they're going to haul their sheetrock from North Carolina and Georgia and Florida and their metal studs and all that. They're not going to buy anything from you guys. So just get ready for it. So, you know, I don't know. It may have fallen on deaf ears, but I think it's got some attention. I really do. So we'll see next year. Because, you know, it's
come the end of January, prevailing wage is just done, isn't it?
I would say so. That'll be a hot ticket item for them. And I don't know why, but, well, you know, unfairly
well,
high wages.
Yeah,
that's why.
Yeah, $60,000. You make $50,000, $60,000 a year. The millionaire head of the Senate says you're making an unfairly high wage.
Says the guy that flies a helicopter to his meetings all over the state.
Yeah, that guy.
Right.
And has a jet.
Yeah.
Did he sell the jet?
Yeah. I don't know. I hate to even think about the guy.
No, I can't.
I really
understand that.
It's definitely. People are feeling the effects already, and we're what, 3 weeks, 2 weeks, yeah, 3 weeks.
Oh, and other business related news affecting almost leveled west by Cole, Virginia. Did you see the Alpha story today?
No, actually, I just came in.
The New York Stock Exchange yesterday, said, "Oops, stop."
Oh, yeah, they dropped them.
And halt. No, they didn't drop them. They began the process, but they outright halted any trading on Alpha common stock because it had sunk from a high in 2008 of $104 per share to 24 cents per share.
Hmm. The times they are changing.
Alpha is in talks with creditors to obtain financing for a potential bankruptcy filing early next month as it grapples with a severe downturn in coal prices. Gee, I'd love to take credit for it, Gerald, or the people I work with, have them take credit for it. But that ain't the tree huggers doing. We can't.
No, that is the frackers doing.
Yeah.
The natural gas, the Marcellus Shale, Utica Shale, and I don't know if you're aware of this, but in Putnam and Mason County, somebody, I can't remember who it was, Chesapeake or one of the big energy companies, drilled a test well down there. And this is just a rumor, as I hear, that is actually deeper than the Marcellus Shale, and we're very excited about it.
One of these days, those bastards are going to let loose a Balrog, and then we're all going to be screwed.
Well, you know, what are we going to do? We don't want to have any water. That's the big thing.
Well, there's that, and people like Tim, and you know, our Southern California friends and Northern California friends, for that matter, that's got to just make y'all crazy. This is one of the wettest, most well-watered states in the union and region in the entire United States, and we're ruining the water as fast as we possibly can, you know, because money.
Exactly. And let me tell you, I lived through a poison water experience on January 9th last year, and it really sucks to have all the water that you want and not a drop you can drink. I mean, that's basically how it was.
You might as well be
marooned.
You might as well be marooned to sea, you know?
Exactly.
Not much different. You can't drink the stuff.
Yeah, this is straight out of Coleridge. Water, water everywhere, nor any drop to drink.
Right. I mean, that's exactly how it was.
Maybe we should change the state bird to the albatross.
Well, you couldn't even take a shower. I mean, that was the bad thing. I mean, all you could do is flush the toilets. It made the house stink.
Wow.
The fumes
were dangerous.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was that licorice smelling stuff, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, the MCHM.
So Gerald and Bob, I have a question. So prevailing wage goes down, which means that there is no minimum wage, then everybody's wages goes down, then you can't get anybody to do any work in West Virginia, so then you have companies coming in from out of state, and they're going to bring all their supplies with them.
I would predict that, yes.
What would you mean? What does that essentially mean? Does that mean that they, you know, that they're not going that? Well, it basically means that all of your people that provide supplies, they're not going to be eating, and a company from out of state has all their supplies, so they don't need to buy anything. So you've got a lot of businesses that are going to go under. Am I correct in that? Is that a logical?
I would say that would be a logical theory. I've seen it with union companies. I worked for one. They wouldn't buy anything here. They brought it all out of Kentucky. You know, they had vendors and suppliers in Kentucky. They'd ship it all the way up here out of Kentucky. And just hated to buy anything here local. So, yeah, I mean, everybody's feeling squeezed.
I've worked on jobs with it. You go through your local supply house, and you make a big order, and they'll order it for you, and you get a drop shipment right to the job.
Well, no, that's a little differently. the one I'm talking about, these companies, or this one company, which isn't in business anymore, but, I mean, they would actually put the stuff on a flatbed truck or a tractor trailer, whatever, at their shop and send it with their driver. I mean, that's, they wouldn't buy anything here. But water, bottle of water. And that's the reality of this. In their rush to save the taxpayers' money on prevailing wage jobs,
they're going to cost the taxpayers money.
And nobody wanted it except Alec and the Koch brothers. They're the only ones that wanted it. There were so many contractors and businesses owners that spoke in against this, and just a handful that were for it.
Well, Gerald, what that does is that encourages these states are asking these companies to come in, and they're inviting them to come in for the, you know, lowest common denominator. I don't even know what I'm saying, but you get the general drift. They're taking companies off one against the other to try to give the best deal to, you know, whoever can...
Larry, it's all part of a race to the bottom. Look what happened in Wisconsin. They slashed $250 million out of the University of Wisconsin system budget and turned around and gave it to a couple of hedge fund billionaires for a new arena for the Milwaukee Bucks to play in.
Yeah, and what kind of construction quality are they going to get in that?
Oh, well, I mean...
Well, it doesn't matter. We're saving money.
And the new arena for the Sacramento Kings being all built all union.
Well, this isn't even related. It's just sort of, well, it's related from Pluto to Earth kind of thing. But my senator, the state of California, authored a bill with another senator to try to get the contractors review board to monitor independent contractors who are building buildings vis-a-vis, you know, because of the disaster in Berkeley. And the state legislator voted it down. They didn't want to have oversight of independent contractors. I don't understand that whole thing, but she's very disappointed. They want to try to avoid having something like this happen in the future. Well, at the same time, the mayor, who is her husband, who I know also, he's encouraging apartment buildings and high-rise apartment buildings to be built in Berkeley as quickly as possible to accommodate students and to also gentrify Berkeley. I don't know whether that's his end goal, but that's what's happening. So
let me throw this one thing out on the whole prevailing wage thing here in West Virginia, and then I'll shut up about it. Just a couple months ago, there were some, I don't even know who did the study. West Virginia now has more people unemployed than employed. It was like 49-51%. 51% of the people in this state don't have a job. Think about that for a minute.
And these are adults or youth?
Yes, adults. I mean,
everybody.
I don't know. Everybody. And so now our Republican leadership in the legislature wants to destroy the few good jobs that are left by cutting the wages. They want to use the Bureau of Labor Statistics rates, which aren't the same thing. Those are residential rates and commercial rates. They're not industrial, and they're just two different things. So it's just going to get worse here, and Bob can attest to this. It's not going to get any better. At least not in the near future. And all these coal mines shutting down, I mean, I'm pretty much with Bob, especially on the mountaintop removal. I don't like the stuff. I don't like anything it's done to this state. All this wealth that we hear about that it's brought to West Virginia, please show it to me. I can take you in the coal fields of this state and drive you around, and please show me the wealth. You know, where is it? I'll tell you where it is. It went somewhere else.
And this is the state... And this is a state that people are unemployed. They're going to need government assistance in order to be able to survive and yet the majority of the lawmakers in the state are totally anti-government.
Well, it kind of goes back. I mean, we had a Democrat majority in the state for 82 years, 83 years, whatever it was, and they're to blame too. I mean,
to the extent that they thought they could rely on a finite resource infinitely, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, they put all the eggs in the extraction industry basket and nothing else. We didn't diversify into training any kind of new workforce for anything. I mean, if it's not oil or gas or coal and timber, they don't care about it because that's who the big lobbyists are up there at the State House. That's where all the money is. So, you know, they're just as much to blame as anyone, if not maybe even more so, because they did have control of both houses and the governor's mansion, for that matter. So, you know, there's plenty of blame to go around. The bad thing is we've got a lot of unemployed coal miners. And, you know, I feel sorry for the people. I really do. But you can't, you know, coal is dying and nothing is going to change that. It's going away. All the easy coal's been mined. The natural gas boom, there's a lot of it. It's a lot easier to get, and it's a lot cheaper. Coal is not going to come back like these people think it will around here. It's never going to happen.
You know, I keep seeing that, Gerald, on places like Facebook, and
yeah,
you know, it just gobsmacks me because you know,
blame the EPA.
Our coal industry's going to come back.
No, it's not.
Well,
it's not ever coming back.
How the is it going to come back? Do these fools? And I'm sorry, I'm not trying to scream at y'all, but do these fools actually think that there's coal in the ground that the coal industry hasn't gotten? I mean, do they think that there's 6-foot seams of coal?
Well, even if there are, where are you going to burn it? What are you going to do with it? You can't burn it in a powerhouse.
Well, I mean, you can put it on a boat and send it to China.
Well, you know, they only want so much. And I guess they're mining their own now. So there's no market for it. The market's drying up, and shame on the leadership for not seeing it. I mean, the handwriting has been on the wall since the 70s, the mid-70s.
If not earlier. Well, I mean, handwriting was on the wall the first minute that they realized that the first time a seam was identified as, you know, not being going all the way to the center of the earth.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Someone told me one time who was, you know, been around mines, that they can a foot of rock for every inch of coal in the seam when they do mountaintop removal. They can move a foot of rock for every inch of coal and make money. I doubt that's true now, but it was 20 years ago, 15, 20 years ago, whatever it was.
Yeah.
So, you know, there it is. I mean, it's not, and here's the other thing about it. If you try to have this conversation we're having here in this group with someone on the street here,
No.
They get mad.
Yeah.
I mean, they get fighting mad. They want to knock, punch you right in the nose. You can be just as civil about it as you want. Say, look, you know, here's how it is, and spell it out for them, just like I have. And they don't want to hear it. They don't want to hear it. Well, coal is this EPA overreaching regulations killing coal. No, it's not. No, it's not. It's the natural gas industry that's killing coal. And there's some strides in renewables.
Yeah, but see, as long as you let them, I mean, even if you get, and this is, I mean, the majority of this state needs to be needs to have an intervention. Because when they say, well, you know, maybe it's the, okay, so it's the frack gas. That means if gas prices go up, then our coal industry can come back. Because it'll be competitive again.
Well, see, that's not how economics works. When you flood the market with something.
Tell them.
Well, I've tried. I have tried, believe me. When there is an abundance of something on the market, the prices go down.
Are you talking about that supply and demand thingy?
Exactly. When the demand goes up and reserves go down, the prices go up. That's just how it works with pretty much any kind of commodity. But they don't understand that. It's Obama
because
he's overreaching EPA.
And that's oddly enough, I had a and you know who he is, and most of the Horn family knows who he is. I had a magnificent conversation with Ed Rabel today, and
yeah,
he and I went back and forth. He thinks part of this, and he said it on this program, has to do with the brain drain that's taken place in this state. And I don't mean to bore people to death with West Virginia stuff, and I don't think it necessarily is, because we really are a test case.
Well, it's relative. It's all relative.
Anywhere that relies on an extractive industry, you want to pay attention to what's going on here. But there's been a brain drain. I mean, we're talking about 100,000 people gone from this state in a generation. You know, just packed up and moved on, and they're sitting on the sofa somewhere, and they get all teary-eyed if they happen to hear Country Roads on the radio. But they're gone.
Well, you probably hear it all the time, see it all the time on the Facebook post. We need to create more jobs so our children can come home. Well, they're not coming home. They've made their lives somewhere else. That's the one thing. If you leave this state and pack up and go wherever you go for a new career, don't even look back. Just don't ever come back. You know, maybe for a visit to see mom and dad or grandma and grandpa, but don't even ever think about moving back here because there's nothing here for you. And it looks like there won't be for a long time.
At the risk of sounding like an Appalachian blasphemer, as beautiful as this region can be, it isn't. I mean, this is a hard place to live, Gerald. Would you agree?
Oh yeah, definitely.
And you know, if you've moved out, if you've moved to North Carolina, if you've moved to Ohio, if you've moved to California, guess what? It's better.
Well, yeah, because West Virginia is 15 to 20 years behind every other state in the Union, except Mississippi, maybe.
I mean, we're still talking about the glories of consolidated schools when that fell out of fashion 20 years ago.
Yeah, it's funny we have this conversation. I've often thought these same thoughts.
When it says here that West Virginia is one of the most karstic, K-A-R-S-T-I-C, what does that mean? I was looking at something. It also says that it was a good place for scientific research and for tourism. But I don't know if that would be a good place for tourism if the state's being ravaged by coal. The environment.
Well, that's just it, Larry. You can't really see it because it's always a ridge or two away from the main highway that you travel through. You can't necessarily see the mountaintop removal. Where you can really see it is from the air. It's just this gray, desolate moonscape. It's terrible.
But what's fascinating, Gerald, is in the last few years, they've gotten more brazen and they've come out nearer the road. I mean, if you travel Route 3 down through Eastern Raleigh and Western Boone County, it's all the way out to the road now.
There was one I noticed just before you get to Beckley. Well, it's about where PAX is there on the turnpike. Off to the right.
Yep.
They've taken that whole top of that mountain off. And I remember, it's been a long time ago, 20 years ago, I had traveled to Beckley a lot. And you could kind of tell they were making a cut back there on the backside, but hell, now that whole mountain's gone, like it was never there. And I was just, and it'd been a couple years since I'd been down that way, and I looked over there and I thought, holy shit, that mountain's gone. I mean, it's just leveled. It's not even there anymore. Mm-hmm. And it's really, I guess I had a coming home moment right there with it.
Yeah. Well,
but I know that the coal industry is in a bad way here because there's a trucking outfit. Just I have to drive by where I'm going to work here that had a lot of coal trucks, a lot, and I guess it's that company's going into bankruptcy now because all those trucks are parked up and they've got the lot blocked and everything.
So what can replace the what can come in to help diversify the economy and replace the dependency on coal?
Well, that's the million-dollar question.
We do have a few manufacturing jobs. I mean, not very many. You've got the Toyota plant down here in Buffalo. They make the engines and transmissions for Toyota cars and trucks. I don't know what models, but those are pretty good jobs. Up in one of the panhandles, another division of Toyota makes heavy trucks. They built a plant up there a few years ago. I hear Procter & Gamble is going to build a, I don't know what they're going to make up there, but shampoo or some shit. It used to be, especially in my area, was the chemical valley. You know, you had the Union Carbide and DuPont and FMC and all.
Yeah,
Romplant. I mean, you had all these chemical plants, and that's all drying up. Those jobs are all gone. I mean, they used to employ thousands and thousands of people, and now they're down to a couple hundred. So there's just never been anything to replace it.
And you've got you've got infrastructure issues, you've got access issues. Now, I mean, for instance, you would think that a place like Beckley would be a potential boom site for industry.
You would think.
Because you've got the convergence of several different highways. It's a hub. I mean, it's a stone's throw from, relatively speaking, from major metropolitan areas. But Larry, this is a government that has absolutely focused and been obsessed by the extractive industries.
And to be frank, that's how they get elected. That's where they get their money. All of them, Democrats, Republicans, this doesn't matter. Not in this state.
Right.
They all get their money from the extraction industries.
Yeah.
Or at least a large sum of it.
Well, they must know what's going on, and they must be turning a blind eye because they're smart people.
You're assuming facts, not in evidence.
When your main job is to get reelected when your term is over, what good are you? Oh, I left out Big Pharma, too.
Yeah, this whole conversation is just boiling me down to what happened up here on the northwest coast of California back in the 70s. The redwood trees were being eliminated, and that was the resource. And they were good-paying jobs, the mills would provide money and all the rest of it. And then the feds came in when there was only 2% of the old-growth redwoods left and created a park, and the companies pushed everybody to bitch like hell about the government taking our job away from us. And I was working in the woods then, and I said, wait a minute. Your job's over in 2 years anyhow. You're just getting a 2-year early retirement. And we don't have any timber industry up here anymore. Just is not there. And all those good union jobs are long gone, and now everybody up here is growing dope and trying to make a living off of it.
So it didn't really get replaced. So those good jobs didn't get replaced. They just disappeared.
They disappeared.
Sounds familiar.
Well, that's the question. Is that just what happened?
That's what happens when you are dependent upon an extractive industry.
Exactly. You say that happened during the 70s, right, Roger?
Yeah.
Okay. What did I say just a few minutes ago? West Virginia's 20 years behind everyone else. In this case, it's 30. See what I mean? And Bob can tell you that the same thing. You know, it seems like everything that happens elsewhere doesn't happen here for another 10, 20 years.
Can you hear me?
But the whole bitch about Obama trying to ruin coal, it's not Obama ruining coal. Coal is gone. I mean, yeah, they went from the deep mines to mountaintop removal, and now basically they've already mined it all. It's not there anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
But Roger, that begs a larger question. And, yeah, it has to do with mono-economies and that line of thinking. But are there just some places, and this, I mean, this drills all the way down into the very heart of capitalist philosophy. Are there just some places that aren't suitable? I mean, there are, for instance, regulations in which within the mining regs of the federal government where there can be a designation of land unsuitable for mining. I guess what I'm trying to say is that what you're talking about, you know, the redwoods are gone, those jobs are gone, and there's just nothing going to come in and replace it. I wonder if anything's going to come into West Virginia and replace it. I mean,
well, now in about another 1,000 years,
well, yeah,
the second growth redwood will come back and it'll be nice stuff unless we totally screw up the environment.
But I mean, in the near term, all kidding aside, because
in the near term, no, nothing.
Roger, is this before Danhauser or Dan Hamburg or Frank Riggs or Mike Thompson or any of these people came in, right? All this stuff happened before any of these legislators came in, either congressional or state, that you're talking about in your area. Roger, I don't know if he can hear me.
Or Clem Miller. It's just there was an extractive capitalist industry that came in. They hauled off all the timber. They milled it. They paid people good money. They extracted a whole lot of money out of it. And then they moved on. I mean, the Arcata Redwood Company made so much money, they ended up buying up the publishing company that did Reader's Digest.
Well, can't we, I mean, I think one word kind of explains a lot of this, and it would go back to Reaganomics. We've outsourced, well, these companies have outsourced all the manufacturing jobs in this country. We don't make anything here anymore like we used to. So those jobs are gone. And the only thing left are service industry or extraction. So is that kind of what St. Ronnie wanted?
Yeah, well, seems like what they were doing, Roger and Gerald, is that they were over-extracting. They were extracting far too much that was, or extracting more than what was really sustainable, and they didn't care about it. I don't know where they got the buyers to buy all the timber, but, or where they got people to use all the timber, but if they hadn't been, you know, just sort of over extracting stuff, we'd have the resources.
Well,
Come on, Larry. Your woods got wiped out after the 1906 earthquake in San Francisco. And when they rebuilt San Francisco, they cut down Muir Woods, and then they moved down to Peninsula, and they wiped out Santa Cruz, and then Humboldt Bay had a port, and they came up here, and they...
Yes, Duncan, you were going to...
Well, they wiped out basically all the redwoods that was on private land. But I was going to say the whole lumber industry, even over here in the valley, collapsed. I mean, it contracted. We used to have a lot of companies here, and one company, Sierra Pacific, that's owned by Red Emerson, has basically taken over the whole industry here in California. Because he owns and manages all the private land anymore. He's one of the biggest landowners in the state of California.
Yeah. So what you're saying is that
California.
Yeah. So what you're saying is that I ought to be a little more sophisticated and realize that, you know, this is how these companies operate, and they're just gonna, you know, just extract whatever they can for however.
Well, but Larry, the question is deeper than that. For instance, you know, the salvation of West Virginia in a post-coal economy is going to be tourism. Well, I got news. You can't run an economy on seasonal work, and nobody runs the rapids between November and March.
Mm-hmm.
And the and there's a lot of people employed in the whitewater industry around here, and they're making $9 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
As Irish Dave points out, I just looked up my capitalism primer. Only 3 chapters in that book: Rape, Ruin, and Run.
Exactly. It's all about the dollar. The hell with the environment. They don't care.
I mean, and for instance, if you were to take a trip down the New River, which millions of people do every year, or at least hundreds of thousands, the guide will tell you, and over here is the ghost town that used to be known as Brooklyn, and over here is the ghost town that used to be, there's oodles of them, and it's just moss-covered foundations, and maybe an old tipple here and there. Kennard.
A lot of them.
Okay.
Kennard, Prince,
yeah.
Thurman. Well, Thurman's still there, but.
Well, Thurman's like only there. People. Thurman's only still there because of Matewan.
Right.
You know, that place was rebuilt to serve as the set for Matewan, and the National Park Service has put it to use as sort of a living memorial to times gone by, or memorial to times gone by. But there's. It's never going to grow. It's never going to do anything more than what it's doing now. I mean, you might get a few more people, a few less people, but it's finite in a different way. And so the question is a larger human question, I think. And that is that in some ways the most successful that West Virginia has ever been. And the whole reason that West Virginia, or not the whole reason, but a big reason why West Virginia split off from Virginia during the Civil War is because the people over here were vastly different from the people on the other side of the Blue Ridge. And Gerald, you probably know what I'm getting at here. You had subsistence farmers here. We've talked a number of times about Joe Bajan's brilliant memoir, Rainbow Pie. And how he talks about, you know, 8 generations of Bajans who successfully lived in a subsistence manner with next to no money, but created generation after generation after generation of people who weren't stupid, who were literate. But, you know, there was no McDonald's. There was no grocery store. There was a local general store. And you traded on credit, and you paid off when the crops came in. And at the risk of sounding like some sort of proto hippie, I wonder. And personally, I don't think, you know, that ain't a bad thing. But I wonder if maybe that's not the future, because you can only extract so much of the commons before there's no commons left to extract.
Yeah.
Well, the probably the bigger question to that, Bob, is who's going to be here? I mean,
well, right, and that's what I'm saying.
Everybody's leaving.
We're reverting to that time. I mean, when my grandmother began teaching school in 1912, the school was one room with a Franklin stove in it. Of course, it was heated by coal, and you had grades 1 through 8, and you taught them, and she taught them all at the same time. And there was kind of a symbiotic thing that went on where if you had a good class of kids, the eighth graders would bring the first graders along. And, you know, there might be 20 kids, 30 kids, okay. But they were coming out with a certain amount of functional literacy, and the ones who could went on to high school. Now I'm not saying that that's everybody's future, but it's a lot. I'm not exactly sure what I'm saying, but Gerald, I think you probably know what I'm talking about, and anybody who's grown up or has relatives, ancestors who grew up in rural America knows what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I think we've all heard the same types of stories about one-room schools and things like that.
And
all that long ago, you know.
Right. And
within
and
the past 100 years.
And they had challenges, most of which were the same challenges that had been faced by every human ever. Because the idea of medicating disease meaningfully is of fairly recent vintage. Jesus, when was it that Bayer decided to put its money on aspirin instead of heroin? That happened in the 20th century. And we are in a way hamstrung by our notions of how things are supposed to be. I mean, if you could take the genius of our forebears here, who managed to plant and grow and harvest and maintain not nuclear families, but extended families, where each generation stepped up after the one before it and continued the work, and you could marry that to modern technology like the internet and modern medicine and access to medical care, you've actually probably got a method for living and renewable energy. You've probably got a method for living that is more sustainable, more successful, and probably results in more leisure time than anybody out there working a 40-hour week job has right now. Or am I just nuts?
No, I think you're onto something. That's one thing that I would wish I had, that I wish I had a little more of, is a little more leisure time.
And there are people out there. There are people out there with skills to build these communities. But we are so thoroughly. This is one of those moments I'd love to have Dr. John in the conversation. There are we are so thoroughly immersed in the notions of modern predatory capitalism that we can't see this. I mean, what if? And wow, I mean, this is getting downright commie. What if people sought to, as the bumper sticker says, live simply so that others can simply live? What if somebody with journeyman carpenter skills taught an entire young generation what she knows? And that generation taught the next generation, and the next thing you know, you've got people building their own houses. What if journeyman electricians, Sparky, taught those skills to a community so that you got people who can wire a house without frying themselves?
I don't think my union would look on that really good.
No, they wouldn't, because they're engaged in capitalist self-preservation.
Well, I'm not supposed to be engaged in the industry anymore since I've retired.
Right, but you get my meaning.
But we're doing that through the union. We're training people.
Well, now that we're going into that, something that's been on my mind for a while, we don't get the apprentice participation like we should. At least my local doesn't. And a lot of that reason, I think, and I hate to, you know, sound like it's just a talking point that you hear all the time, but I see it with my own two eyes, the damn drugs.
Well, I was going to say, do you have to pass a piss test to get into the apprenticeship program?
Yes,
you do.
That's going to lock out, not to sound like an old crank or a curmudgeon or anything, that's going to lock out a shitload of young people.
Exactly, and I don't want to sound like an old, you know, curmudgeon either, but it's the fact of the matter is you can't get any skilled people that know what they're doing that can pass a drug test.
Right, and there's a
where does the blame go for that? You know?
Well, there's a problem there. One, there's a big difference between being drunk on the job where you can stick the breathalyzer in the guy's mouth and know that he's fucked up, okay? There's a big difference between that and peeing in a jar and saying, "Well, I'm sorry, son, you've got THC in your system." "Yeah, but I smoked that last week when I was out at a friend's house on the weekend." Too bad you can't come into our apprenticeship program.
And I fully agree with you there, you know. And that's something that I have said for a long time. You know, what you did 2 weeks ago, a week ago, doesn't, as long as it doesn't affect your performance or your safety on the job, it really shouldn't be an issue as to whether you're employable or not. But it is.
I mean, I saw a story just a couple of days ago. I forget what's that. I think it's Colorado, maybe. Or maybe not. They're furiously trying to figure out a way for law enforcement officers to test people for being high right then and there. Because, you know, you can test hair, you can test blood, you can test urine, but it's only going to tell you that there's a certain amount of THC in the system. It's not going to speak to impairment. I mean, unless we're going to come up with some sort of field sobriety test like they have with alcohol, you know, where you walk a line. Well, you know, dude's going to be able to walk the line, and he's going to walk it, you know, very slowly and powerfully, you know. and he's probably going to be like Muhammad Abdulaziz, who gets pulled over for going too damn slow. But you know, these jobs are dangerous jobs, and there's a lot of dangerous stuff, and there's a lot of skill involved. But isn't there something to be said for teaching responsibility as opposed to because like the piss test in the apprenticeship programs are basically Nancy Reagan saying just say no. And it don't work.
Well, here's the thing. When they
continue on with the piss test, most there's some jobs you got to report to. You got to pass a piss test. Like the power plant I went to work on in 2001 for Bechtel, once you got the hire on thing and you went through all the indoctrination and all the information, you had to take a piss test right on the job site. They had a nurse there, and they had their own. They sent out stuff, and if they put you to work, but if a guy didn't pass the piss test, a couple of days later, the job steward would come up and tap the guy on the shoulder and say, "You're out of here. You flunked your piss test."
Well,
yeah, and that may be for something he did 26 days ago before he ever came on the job.
Yeah, it could have been, but that's just the way the climate is now. I mean,
right. So
if you're gonna work, don't smoke dope, don't do drugs.
Right.
I mean,
so the market,
you never know what job you're gonna go on is gonna require a piss test.
Right. So the market is gonna sort that out, but the problem is, as Gerald has noted, at least relative to this area, it just means that you don't have anybody coming into the program.
You can't man the work. That's the problem. We can't man the work.
Which then becomes an argument for, well, okay, I got some boys from across the Rio Grande down here, and we'll come up and do the job for you.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. We've got, I haven't seen the out-of-work list at our local, but I'm going to guess, and it'll be at least 120 people on that list. And of that 120 people, half of them are high. Or maybe even more than that. And you get back to the drug testing thing. Once they turn out the apprentices, I mean, if they get with the right companies that really don't care, that don't want to pay for the drug testing and all that, then they're dirty then too. And, you know, I do mine. I just got the letter yesterday, as a matter of fact, from the lead office. This is the other part of it. I'll read this one sentence to you in this letter. It tells me that it's about to expire, which I knew. And the renewal date above is selected within the 90-day period prior the expiration date of your current lead card. So, you see, I knew it was coming. I knew I was going to have one come up at least, at the very least, a month before my card expires. So there's a way around it there. You know, you just stay clean for a couple months before your card goes dead.
Right, unless you get one of those jobs that Sparky was talking about. And yeah, I don't want.
Plus, we had random testing too.
Yeah, some do, but most don't. Not around here.
Mm-hmm. And I don't want people to think that I'm making some argument that, you know, dude, you should be able to smoke one on the way to work, and then, you know, like, you know, lay 50 courses of brick. No, people get killed that way. And I, all kidding aside, I can't tell you the last time I smoked pot. But you know what? I mean, I never get behind this microphone under the influence of anything because I made that promise 11 years ago that no one tuning into this broadcast would ever hear Limbaugh Radio.
Now, friends.
My friends!
Anyway.
When shit was going seriously sideways earlier, I looked at Agnes and I said, honey, bring the tequila. Because I may be into it. Because I didn't know if we were going to get back on the air. And so,
I guess my biggest concern, it's not really a concern. It is, but it isn't. It's one of those things that I have no control over. Where does the country go now? We've just discussed one of the biggest problems, at least in my industry, drug use. And there's a lot of blame to go around for that. I throw some of it at Big Pharma for pumping all these pain pills into this region, and doctor shopping and things like that. Where does it end? You know, where are we going to end up?
Well, and I think that's almost an existential question because, I'd really like to have the input of some younger people on this, but you remember during the late 60s and early 70s, there was this notion that people were rejecting the middle class way of life. Well, we found out later that no, they didn't. They smoked their dope, dropped their acid, and then they settled down and got good jobs and made a good living and ta-da. Is that something you just expect from the younger generation, from generation to generation? I don't know, but I mean there are people out there that would rather smoke dope than have a job that pays $40 an hour.
Yes, that is the sad truth, and I've seen it. Jobs that paid, you know, a lot more than, well, they took home $30 an hour, 30-some dollars an hour. Didn't care if they worked all week or not. Come in late, leave early, miss, you know,
You cannot walk in around here, and you probably see the same thing, Gerald. And you know what? People in Iowa probably see this. People in Missouri see this. People in Tennessee see this. People in Indiana see this. New York, it matters not. But in a beat-down, bedraggled place like West Virginia, you cannot walk into Dollar General. You cannot walk into McDonald's, Burger King, Walmart, Lowe's. They all have signs on the door saying, help wanted, apply within.
Yes.
Now, there's a duality at work there, because on the one hand, some people they can't keep because they won't give enough hours work for it to make anything resembling a living, or the pay is shitty. Sometimes they entice you in with pay that appears to be, you know, above minimum wage, blah blah blah, and then you don't get enough hours to matter, or they'll give you hours, but the wages are shit. But in some cases, I mean, really. A piss test to work at fucking Walmart? McDonald's? I mean, I know French fry grease and employee theft when the munchies kick in, maybe, but... And of course, if you ask the right-wingers, they go, oh, yeah, those are supposed to be entry-level jobs. You're not supposed to be feeding your family working at McDonald's. Well, where are you supposed to work to feed your family?
Exactly.
And that self-made son of a bitch, Jeb Bush, saying that people aren't working enough? aren't working long enough hours. You know, that prick.
And well, that's that whole big I, little U syndrome there.
Well, that's also the congenital Bush cluelessness. That's what is this barcode scanner thingy? That's no weapons of mass destruction under the couch. That's we got a woman here who works three jobs, and that's uniquely American.
Bob, I don't understand. You asked a question. What is it about the fact that people would rather smoke dope than have a 40 hour?
I didn't pose that in the form of a question, Larry. I posed that in the form of an assertion of fact.
Well, could it be that people are just tired of working and not feeling that they're getting anything meaningful out of the work?
Maybe, but the only way to reach a conclusion on that hypothesis is to say, okay, $20 an hour, don't smoke dope.
And let me tell you how that works. They still do it.
Yeah, because you're talking about a union local where, you know, it's not unheard of to bring in $35 an hour. You know, with insurance and a meaningful, real retirement.
Right now in this area, a class 2 laborer, that's a semi-skilled laborer, which is the general rate, I think the total package is about $39 an hour, and it's like $25 on the check. You take $25 and change home on the check. So which is a good living. I mean, I've made a good living at it, and you know, I'm happy with my pay and my insurance is good. I'm not complaining, mm-hmm. But I can't get guys to come out and work for $25 an hour. We've got my local has 1,000 members. You know how many come to a monthly meeting, Larry?
How many?
About 18. And that's a cold hard fact.
And that ain't just your local.
No, that ain't just my local. And I'll tell you right off the bat, 10 of them are officers or hold an office in the union, so they have to be there. And the rest of them are apprentices. They have to come. We shouldn't even be able to have a monthly meeting at our local down at our hall. It's not big enough.
What does that say about the union? What does that say about the workers?
Well, how do you get them involved? What do you do? I mean, we've tried about everything.
I remember a few years ago when Boss Man Wayne was running his local, they gave away really, really nice Carhartt jackets with the Carpenter's logo on the back, you know, really fancy embroidered.
We had drawings for nice jackets.
Well, you had to show up. You had to show up at X number of meetings to qualify for the jacket.
Well, ours was, there were two tickets when you signed in the book. You picked up a blue ticket and a red ticket, and at the end of the meeting, there was a drawing for $100, $100 check. They gave it to you right there, or a local union jacket. You know, there were two winners at every meeting, because I've got a couple of the jackets, because I've always went to the meetings. And I had won the $100, two or three times, something like that. But we had to cut all that out, because all the man hours are down. We, you know, there's no more of that. We had to stop that.
And it goes also, I mean.
But you can't even get somebody to come there for $100.
We have Cope Fund drawings at our meetings. You put in a buck, and then.
I mean, this reminds me of the little kid that I grew up with, whose mother, in order to get him to eat his vegetables, had to hide the broccoli behind a little pile of chocolate pudding.
Yeah.
I mean, if you, and then there's this. I mean, way back when we were first putting in all the equipment to get all this going, had a guy from what was then Verizon. You know, they sold off to Frontier. But he told me, and he was a, you know, he was a good union man and a good progressive. And he said, I cannot tell you the number of trucks that I could get into at the yard on any given morning, and the radio is tuned to Rush Limbaugh's station.
Oh yeah.
He said I work in a union local that is full of Republicans who vote for people who want to slit their throats.
So what you're saying, Gerald, you're saying that if your workers don't come to the meetings, then they have impaired bargaining strength. They can't keep, you know, and that hurts.
Well, Larry, Gerald and I were at a humongous labor rally this past March.
Okay.
It was one of the first decent days.
Yeah.
And there were thousands of members of organized labor out on the steps in force to show that they meant business. And there were some UMWA members carrying signs that said, "Are you next?" And it was the first time Gerald and I met. And I looked at him and I said, "How many of those UMWA members carrying those placards do you reckon ran, not walked, but ran to the polls last November and voted this legislature in because Obama has a war on coal?"
And we surmised, what, about 50% of them?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that means the union's not. But then in the case of the UMWA, who would be surprised? Because the UMWA couldn't bear to endorse that Negro. I mean, it was the first time in a generation that the UMWA had not endorsed the Democratic candidate for president.
Speaking of endorsements, not to change the subject, did you see where the AFT came out and endorsed Hillary?
Yeah, what were they thinking?
Well, I know what they were thinking. They're trying to head off any kind of support for Bernie within the membership, the rank and file. That's exactly what that's about.
Is Roger still here?
No.
Because I have a question to ask. I don't know if you were at the convention when Art Torres was the chair.
He's not here.
Okay. He's not around. Okay.
Let me just take a minute here because we've got about 13 minutes left in the program. And note that Laborman's challenge was met, and we have $50 remaining on Sparky's Pull the Pin Challenge, which will pretty much end us on an okay note for the week by a couple of dollars, if it gets met. Thank you very much to Rick. Are you still there, Rick?
I am. I'm about to leave. I was going to say goodbye to everybody and wish everybody a good weekend and a great conversation today. Really enjoyed it.
Well, I wanted to thank you for jumping in and being the first half of Sparky's Pull the Pin Challenge. And hopefully somebody will jump in on the back half of that, too, in the next 13 minutes or so.
Exactly. Yeah, well, everybody have a great weekend.
Get some headphones for your house.
Yes, I'm going to, Sparky. I've got some at the office and just didn't make it there today. I planned to, but that's one of those things. But just as well, because I can get to dinner on time that way.
Well, did you get the cats off the stove? You know, you don't want them overdone or anything. I mean.
Yeah, the cats are off the stove. They're very medium rare. It's very, very tasty, but no.
That's funny.
Well, the reason we have to feed them up high on the counters is because otherwise our little dog will eat all their food.
Yeah, and that's not a pleasant experience.
No, it's not. And she's, like, fierce. She, like, will, like, you know, bark at them and bite and, you know. She's like a 12-pound dog, but she thinks she's like, you know, a Newfoundland or something like that, you know?
Fang of the Great White North, right.
Exactly.
Well, I hope you have a lovely and successful date, a lovely dinner, enjoy the concert, and, I don't know, send back some pictures of something melting in MacArthur Park.
I will do the best, and hopefully I can find that damn cake they keep talking about.
Well, you should be able to because it ain't raining.
There you go. All right, everybody. Take care, man.
Thanks again, Rick, for kicking in, and thanks for being part of the conversation.
Absolutely, Bob. You take care. Have a great week yourself.
All right. Bye now.
Bye.
Our buddy Rick in Southern California headed off to a Joan Baez concert. $50 remaining on the Pull the Pin Challenge, and thank you very much, Sparky, for making it this evening.
No problem. That's what it's there for.
Well, there are fires needing put out, no doubt about it. I think this has been an interesting conversation, and I think I think there are some doors, you know, kind of because we have to think about them in different ways than simply the model of, well, if we can just get another industry to come in and replace the industry that's leaving. You know, that's the old Daffy Duck cartoon where he's Duck Dodgers' private eye or whatever, where he throws the old case of beer, empty beer bottles out the window, and he says, I had just finished an old case. I needed a new case. Yeah, that don't work. I got a note here from Steve. He says, if drug tests had been commonplace when I was in the military several decades ago, we couldn't have manned half the ships in commission. 20 years ago, the Federal Civil Service was debating the issue of even allowing random drug testing. Now politicians want to drug test food stamp recipients. You won't qualify for a student loan if they snag you on a test either. It has all become a part of the culture generally, and so as long as a cheaper, even illegal source of labor is out there, you're going to piss in the jar for any shit-shoveling job. Regards, Steve in China.
I would say that's right on point.
Piss in a cup.
Yeah, because the jar's expensive.
I remember when I was in the service, in Thailand, we had the urinal, and they had the 45-degree footprints on the floor with the security cop sitting to the one side of you watching you pee.
Well, I didn't realize they did it that far back.
Oh, yeah. It's called they call it golden flow.
Yeah. This culture has a drug paranoia. They have a paranoia about whatever they consider terrorism. They have a paranoia about fraud, and a paranoia about, and an obsession with saving as much money as they possibly can. Well, maybe I'm right, maybe I'm wrong, but that's what it feels like.
Interesting comment coming from Roger. He says, I've been listening, but the headphones died. The battery died. He said, the AFT endorsement was a function of the president of AFT looking for the Department of Education post in the cabinet. The membership is really pissed. It was an executive committee choice without polling the membership. And that makes, that makes as much sense as anything I've read, because, I mean, even everything I've always heard says, you know, you let the electorate sort out who the winner of the primary is going to be, and then you do your endorsing for the national and the general, right?
Exactly. Generally, they do not endorse in the primary. They wait for the primary to be over and the candidate, you know, to be selected. Whoever won the primary, whoever they're going to get behind, that's when they do it. It's highly unusual, really, for them to endorse this far out, too. I mean,
I thought it seemed extremely unusual.
Yeah. Well, that's probably your answer right there. Roger.
Gerald, I think the reason why they did that, and Bob, it's because they want to make sure that Hillary gets in there. They don't want to give Bernie Sanders or Jill Stein or anyone else, you know, the inkling of the idea that they might have a chance winning anything. That's why I think they probably came out early. Maybe I'm wrong.
You know, I think you're wrong, because he didn't go to the membership, and they didn't.
Well, it essentially touches on what I guessed at. You know, it was just so there wouldn't be any support from the rank and file for Bernie.
Even the head of the Steelworks, what's his name, Leo something or something?
Leo Gerard.
Leo Gerard. He was on Ed Schultz's podcast the other morning, and he was describing the, because he's on the executive board of the AFL-CIO, you know, as being a union president.
Right.
So they won't make any recommendations till way down the road.
That was what was kind of shocking about it, because AFT is a member of the AFL-CIO.
Yeah, but
marching orders.
It was just the president of the, you know, the union came up with that shit, and the membership's pissed. That's what I heard.
Now this seems like it's completely upside down and bass backwards. Anatole in the chat room is telling me that the NEA turned around and endorsed Bernie.
hadn't heard that.
I haven't either. But if true, isn't the NEA substantially larger than the AFT?
Probably. I don't know. I really don't know. It's hard enough to keep up with my own union.
I know there's some local unions that have endorsed Bernie. I can't tell you, but I mean, that ex-CWA president is working for him on a volunteer basis.
Wow.
Well, strange things have happened.
Well, what we thought was going to be a fairly low-key Friday on the front porch has turned out to be a rousing good discussion, and I want to thank all of you, including Rick, who's now off to the concert, for participating. Thank you, Larry. Thank you, Cindy and Steve, and thank you, Gerald, for jumping in. Thanks, Roger, who's listening. Thanks, Tim. We didn't hear much from you, and that's a shame, but thank you for jumping in and being part. And, of course, as always, thank you, Sparky, for being the longtime moderator of this group. It was a delightful conversation, even though the program got off to a rocky start, and I made it even rockier by screwing up the recording and not hitting record until we came on for the Friday on the front porch portion of the program. So the file will be a little bit smaller, and well, I make mistakes now and then, and yet I could pass a drug test. Go figure. And thanks one and all to all of you who over the course of the week have supported, and over the course of the month, and over the course of the years have supported the program. You are the only reason this program continues to exist. We need $50 more to meet Sparky's Pull the Pin Challenge, and hopefully maybe that'll happen on the podcast or something. But it is roundly and soundly appreciated. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky and Lottie, moderators in the Horn chat room. Thank you again to Sparky for moderating the Horn Malloy Skype chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you to John Fox. Thank you to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. And, of course, thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACACT, ACHEACT.ORG. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Have a wonderful weekend, everybody. Back for more and Monday. You know, on Monday.